All stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. The story you tell your children, the story you tell your loved ones, and the story of your life has a beginning, a middle, and an end. For instance, the story of Cinderella. In the beginning, Ella is down in the basement with the furnace. She is covered with cinders, thus Cinderella. She's really named Ella. An announcement arrives that there's going to be a ball, and Ella is invited because the prince is in the market for a bride. Then the fairy godmother appears with glass slippers and a coach with white horses and a gown for Ella, who looks as pretty as a peach when she's all dressed up. In the middle of the story, Cinderella goes to the ball and dances with the prince all night, and he is stricken with love for her. She almost forgets the time, but is able to leave before midnight. And in her hurry, she leaves a glass slipper on the stairs, a calling card of sorts. She gets home just as the carriage turns to a pumpkin and her attendants turn to mice. But she still has one glass slipper, which she hides in her purse. That's the middle of the story. The end of the story is when the prince comes with one glass slipper and sees Cinderella with its mate. She puts it on, they kiss, and they live happily ever after, and that's the end. Or is it? Happily ever after, no doubt, is complicated. With Cinderella in therapy with PTSD from abuse by her stepsisters, and the prince in a men's group complaining about Cinderella's shoe fetish as she collects pair after pair of designer shoes. So there really is no ending, just a continuing. The modern story of death that science tells says we are born, we live, and then we die. We begin, we endure, and then we end in its oblivion. What began with water and agony ends with agony and dust. Science tells us that our beginning is by chance and our ending is by accident. Science gives us a meaningless and small story of our life in the absence of God. Yet we do not experience ending as much as we experience the conclusion of one thing and the beginning of another. All seeming endings are the beginnings of something else. We finish college and we start a degree. We finish addiction and we start a life. We finish a life and we begin a spiritual reflection on that life. Death is not the end. Death is a change from physical life to spiritual life. The difference between this life and the next is that in the next life, instead of fear and isolation, we see in terms of joy and relationship. That's why, I promise, death will be the happiest day of your life. The old story. The religious fairy tale that we're told about death meant that it was an ending that involved two extremes. Either you go to the golden streets of heaven, Christians only, or suffered forever on the scorched plains of hell, everyone else. In the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church added purgatory as a kind of drafty front porch stuck on the front of the solid house of heaven. If you had gone to another church this morning, you likely would hear something like this. If you offend God, if you make the Almighty angry, he will squash you like a bug. You've heard that, at least the tone of voice. This is the age-old Christian strategy of scaring people into good behavior. When I was studying to be a priest, a fellow seminarian came into my room one day to tell me how sorry he was for my parents. I asked, alarmed, what had happened to my parents. My fellow seminarian said that because they weren't Catholic, they would be going to hell. He was sorry. I was furious. How dare you send my parents to hell? They're sweet people. How dare you send anybody to hell? At one way or another, at one time or another, they were sweet people. Hell is more like our criminal justice system than anything like God. Christian death and its consequences is a harrowing experience. So you're probably wondering, what is the other side really like? Well, I'm here to tell you. I have talked with about 50 people who've had near-death experiences. I've read the work of Edgar Cayce, Michael Newton, and others who have researched the afterlife, and I've had a few of my own mystical experiences. So the afterlife, for one thing, has colors that are brilliant, the music is bright, and there is a relief having completed a life. Most of us are pretty burned out, especially if we're old, by the end of our life. Sometimes your relatives and friends give you a standing ovation for a life well done, a life well lived. Then there's the review of your life with an emphasis on your loving acts and intentions. They're very interested in what you did right rather than what you did wrong. The afterlife is a bit different than marriage. And you return to your soul group. Your soul group is made up of the people you really clicked with in this life and in other lifetimes. In past life regressions I've conducted, people often weep when they come to their soul groups. The people who have been mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives, lovers and friends, people you meet in this life and it feels like you've known them forever, you remember those people. They're your spiritual buds. You probably know some of your spiritual buddies here at Unity. We've all known each other before. And like the song says that we sang, we dearly love one another. Although the details we have forgotten, the essence shines through. Look around the room just for a minute. Everyone is in costume. Strange costumes, some of you. Others, sort of pretty costumes. But the essence shines through. We've all known each other before. We love each other completely. Then we go before a council of elders who encourage us and give us tips on how we can live a more fulfilling life. Next time. No judgment. Simply a gentle, loving assessment of how we're doing in our journey as a soul. Then we take classes with teachers like Reverend Paula. We danced to music led by extraordinary musicians like Reverend Richard and the music team, of course. And we constantly give each other the Christ salute. The Christ in me greets the Christ in you. And we are very, very happy. Then we wash each other's spiritual feet and hold each other's spiritual hands. In short, we are happy together. Then we plan our next life, lining up spiritual lessons and embedding in our consciousness cues to recognize soulmates and spiritual contacts. Now, everyone always asks, why was I born to my family? I seem a stranger there. My mother didn't always seem like my mother. My father didn't always seem like a good father. Some people seem to get luckier. I would say that the soul is extremely optimistic. The soul sees everything in terms of possibilities. So when it comes here, even when the parents or the situation isn't perfect, or if it's rather iffy, the soul says we can make it. We can make something good out of this situation. Your soul tells you that all through life. That's why you keep going. When you don't feel like keeping going, the soul probably has retracted some bit. But you keep going because the soul says you can. Then we parachute into planet Earth and incarnate, crying our heads off, in effect saying, I hope I made the right decision to be born into this scary place. Walter Russell, the Virginia mystic, said that being born for the soul is more frightening than death for us on earth. That going from spirit to earth was like moving from a 5-star hotel on the French Riviera to a tent in Siberia. Now notice, I said we plan our next life. You heard that, didn't you? Reincarnation seems to be a fact of life. We have lived lives on earth over hundreds of thousands of years. Reincarnation is a belief that the Unity Church does not insist upon, but it's open to. I would say that somewhere in your deep memory, you too believe in reincarnation. I once asked my Catholic congregation how many believe that purgatory and even hell were really lived out in our life on the earth. And the people looked startled, but about a third of them raised their hands. How many of you think the same thing, that we're really living out a kind of purgatory or even hell here on earth? Whoa. And what happened in my congregation is that everybody laughed nervously. Catholics were always laughing nervously because they were guilty and a little scared. They thought it was a trick question, maybe. But I think maybe that laughter was almost saying, we've played a trick on ourselves here on earth. We're enduring what we refused to endure last time. In a way, it was a trick question in that it got people thinking about karma without naming it. Karma is the Hindu belief that we live out the consequential results of our unloving behavior and attitudes. In other words, I feel and experience this time what I did to others in other lifetimes. If I broke your heart in one life, I might feel the pain of your broken heart in this life. This also explains why old souls have so much empathy for others and even a fear of being ungentle with anyone in this life. I would further say that codependence is sometimes the psychological malady of older souls. Codependence is when you help the other person too much and they take advantage of you. Unity churches are often full of old souls, poor things. So dying is no problem. When we save a life, we're not really saving a life. Life never ends, but we're extending the incarnation. But I would say that heaven is right here and right now. Instead of being purgatory or hell, it can be heaven. The universe is happy. I had a mystical experience once in which I saw everything filled with light. As I looked at everything filled with light, that was the grass, the walk, the fence, the barn, the trees, even the barbed wire fence was happy. It was full of light and it was happy. Everything is happy. The chairs you're sitting on are happy. The roof and its creaking and settling is happy. The plants outside the windows, the poor earth that we beat up upon, the stars that peek through to us at night, they're all happy. I've been astounded by the happiness of everything that is. Now, everyone stand up. If you can. You can sit if you can't. There you go, Joyce. You're going to make it. There, yes, you made it. Good. Okay. Now, my experiences have taught me that when you love one another, when you connect with each other, you feel that love and that happiness. Now, you don't have to hold hands if you don't want to. I realize you may be afraid of catching the virus from other people, but just kind of open up and spread your arms. There you go. When we connect in love, we can feel the happiness that we are, the love that connects with love that is stronger than death. Your unhappiness, keep going, your unhappiness draws you in. Feel that sadness drawing you in. Just imagine when you were sad. You can draw in. Draw in. You feel depressed. Feel unhappy. Oh no, life isn't going the way I want it to. And then something happens. You see someone you love. Someone sees you. They stretch out to you. They hold a hand. You go out again. Your happiness inspires you to extend. You think of Heidi Kolber. Yeah. You think of Ardell and her prayers. Woo! Yeah, you think of me. Okay, good. You reach out and you extend your joy. You do not die, and in love you join. Life is forever, and love is its eternal heartbeat. Thank you. Spirit. Everybody be seated. But keep feeling the energy in your heart, energy in your chest, energy in your arms, in your head, in your feet, in your legs. Keep feeling that energy. As you go inside now, inside to your heart, which is deep and touches your soul, go into that place where your happiness has been untouched by the sorrow of the world. Go into that place where you are innocent and hopeful and joyful, where all is very, very well. Close your eyes, be still and be quiet. Come to the surface. Like a child waking up on a summer morning, looking out into the world and looking up into the sky, knowing that adventure awaits, your life awaits, the afterlife awaits. Eternity awaits. All is happy, all is joined, and all is well.
Flow through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I open up to be an expression of